Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Or they've got, like, for the interrogation, do they think they have the cootie catcher back?
Okay. We're going to find out if you committed this murder. Now give me a color. Baker Sheet Boys here. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, taking you through the cyberpunk streets of the Neon Dynasty set Magic the Gathering this week. With me, of course, is my two co-hosts. Guys, why don't you say hi at the exact same time?
Hi.
That's two improv styles. One, Jamie was mirroring. Pete was just counting with his fingers so Jamie could see when to go.
Yeah.
A real clash of the arts here on the Lore Boys show, but we like to think that it makes a nice melange.
I've definitely made it known. Sometimes I try to leave politics out of it, but every once in a while I do let it slip that me, Peter O'Donoghue, host of the Lore Boys, or one of... I always vote against the party in power that supports improv comedy. I think it's an abomination.
I'm the opposite. I'm the improv wing of this government. I'm very pro improv. Think it's hilarious at most levels. Incredibly fun to do as well. And Jamie, what's your stance?
I'm James Miller.
Don't be an improv centrist.
He likes
the big ones. He likes Whose Line, you know. Yeah. But he's see somebody's garage show.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Just don't ask me to like do anything for it or pay for it or anything like that.
Yeah, but
it
can exist exactly. Around me. As long as my taxes don't go up, I'm fine with improv being around.
Improv tax. What the fuck?
I guess a little bit of housekeeping before we start the show. This is the at time of release. This is the second to last call before Montreal Comic Con. If you guys wanted to reach, if you guys wanted to put it on our piece of corn, July 9th is the date that we will be in Montreal at Comic Con with a little mini boys con taking place afterwards. It's not organized. We're not the type to organize things. So,
we can't say what bar it'll be because our fans will blow up their phones the whole time that we're there. Right?
Yeah, of course. So, why need reservations?
Can I talk to the Lore Boys? Can I talk to the Lore Boys?
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I think it's like maybe four people who are going to reach that I'm aware of. If they get four phone calls about just like, hey, you guys hosting Boys Con? I think that would be an appropriate thing to do.
But what about our haters?
Let's dox. Stay tuned to the Discord if you can't make it to Boys Con, because we're going to dox whatever bar we go to.
Yeah.
You guys can.
What about our haters, though, if they like call in bomb threats and stuff to ruin Boys Con?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Hey, is this Boy Con? Yeah, I have a legitimate bomb threat. Also, stop trying to be so woke.
that guy, our archenemy.
Our one critic, really.
I guarantee he still listens to the show, 100%.
The only other piece of housekeeping that I have is welcome to new patron Zekin. I think it's a pseudonym, but I'm not going to risk it with your second name. Thanks so much for the support. It means a lot.
Your Zekin name?
Yeah. that was Mr. Miller over there making fun of your name, good sir. Yeah. I would never do.
Yeah. Canceled patron, of course. Comic-Con gonna be great. We're looking really forward to it. And of course, BoysCon is not like an official thing that you're missing out on. We're just gonna drink and just gonna have some beers with the people who, you know, had the like absolute like the good grace to show up, I guess, because I think it's very cool.
It's very formally informal.
Yeah.
But it is black tie. So do bring a tuxedo.
Yeah. Black tie, corduroy pants though.
Yeah, it's all business up top, business casual on bottom, baby.
I can't remember if it was like in a gym class or something. I had a pair of corduroys and like all my laundry was dirty at some point. This is like in elementary school or high school or something. And I was in a gym class and for some reason I ended up at the corduroy pants and I climbed like halfway up the rope. I never made it up the rope, but it was like one of the furthest I'd ever made it and slid down and the rope wore off all of the corduroy ridges, you know, like the cornfield yeah. ridges that they put into it.
Yeah. What makes corduroy corduroy?
Yeah, and then it wore those off, like, just on the inside of my thighs and in the grundle. So I had, like, a perfectly smooth inner thigh and grundle area on these pants that I could never wear them again.
Like corduroy chaps, basically?
Basically, oh, yeah. Yes. you got ridgeless chaps where it's just the ass is completely smooth.
Well, firemen will sand down their corduroys so they can get down the pole faster to the truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that considered like juicing? Is that like doping if you go down the pole too fast?
Yeah, exactly. Only if you're at the fireman's competition.
So of course. At some strip clubs, they had the swirling poles. Do you think they ever have the swirling poles at the
fireman's? Just for fun. Yeah. Just so the boys can have some fun.
On the way down.
Just orient them. Yeah.
Honestly, why not? Well, sexist if they don't, okay? Dr. Peterson tells us so.
Well, yeah. They can always they can always check their sticks for fires that way, you know?
Yeah. If a fire's gotten into the station.
Yeah. What if it is a false call so that the fire can ambush the firefighters in the station, right?
Oh, yeah. Fire will do that.
The fire police, I like to call them.
I like to call them the fire brigade. Okay. Cool. Let's jump into magic, huh? Our story... Yeah. Today starts with two people in the lab working late one night when our listeners behold an eerie sight. So I did mention we're talking Neon Dynasty of Kamigawa, which is a plane that we've covered on two previous episodes. If you want to know how we ended up here, you can listen to our two previous Kamigawa episodes. If you want to know more about Magic the Gathering, it's our most recorded topic we recently looked up. So it starts with Urza and the Brothers War is where we start, but there's a ton of other episodes and kind of more standalone arcs that you can go listen to where we'll give a broader explanation of the card game Magic the Gathering. We will talk a bit about the makeup of the world, which we did cover in the last two episodes, just as a refresher, mostly for Jamie and Peter, because I do trust our listeners to have listened to what I said last time and remembered it.
Not me.
And then we will jump into the story of a young lad named Kaito Shizuki. So the world has stabilized a millennium after the Kami War, with Kyodai, the spiritual leader of the Kami, helping to appoint emperors for humanity based on what she thinks is best. So if you guys remember, it's, you know, a dictatorship, but it is, you know, if the CIA was good installing those dictators.
Right.
And has been doing a good job so far. Kamigawa as a whole, like, is doing pretty well. We talked about the two sides of the plane, the material world and the spirit world, slowly merging together, which is a process that has been happening over time. And it's been forming these things called mergings, these spaces of the plane where reality seems to be unfolding. At the end of the last episode, we talked about how some scientists had managed to build gates on those places, on those points called merge gates. While other right. scientists were like hardworking on like how to harness some of that energy. One of them invented like an endless power source from it. So we basically have like nuclear power plants around where these merge gates are. So they become very, very important like parts of the world. We have the Order of Jugan, who we talked about last episode, who are like these monks who descend from the, not necessarily descend from the snake people, but they're run by the Orochi, whose main job is to act as like emissaries to Kami, who wander through the gates mistakenly as the spirit world shrinks. Kami are just getting ejected out into the material world. Usually they're scared, lost, confused, angry, whatever, and they can be quite dangerous. So there is kind of this whole cultural industry, I guess, around, you know, greeting Kami as they enter and calming them down.
Yeah, handing them the foil blanket and the white bread, no crust, single slice of cheese sandwich. And
yeah, exactly.
Your passport will be arriving shortly.
Yeah, there's a social worker there. The fire brigade is just behind, just in case, you know.
Yeah, keeping, with the hose ready.
Yeah, spinning on their poles 360 degrees to see where the fire's coming.
It's insane how long it takes to get a passport in Canada these days, by the way. We'd only be so lucky to get a...
Yeah, it's been crazy. Yeah. I was just going to say, I imagine your spinning fire brigade... Fire Brigade is like a lighthouse, basically, where they've just got like one guy on a pole up in the top, basically.
It's he's a fire got, elemental who's just, yeah, dancing his heart out.
Yeah.
So at the metaphorical center of things is Kawashi, which is the sprawling urban hub and cultural center of Kamigawa. It's okay. The biggest city, and I have placed a picture, which I think I shared with you guys last time as well, of Kawashi in our Discord channel. Hyper futuristic, I think is kind of fair to say. Very like
bonsai style tree growing directly out of the middle of it.
Yeah, exactly. So we did talk about the bonsai, the large tree. It was a tree called Bosaiju, which was protected. If you guys remember, some dragons like incubated in there for a time before reemerging as their new forms.
Right.
It's like anytime somebody builds a skyscraper taller, it grows taller to always be the tallest thing in the city, basically.
Like it's the mountain tree. It's the mountain in Montreal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can't build a skyscraper larger than Mount Royal because it just grows.
Yeah.
But
it is gross. It is a dumb like old French Catholic rule, but I totally support it because I've been to Toronto and I've been to Edmonton and cities with taller buildings than we have in Montreal. It's fucking disgusting. Like I've never been to New York City, and the idea of it repulses me personally, and I'm glad that we can keep it short here.
Have you ever been
shorter than the cross? There's like a 30-foot cross on the top of the mountain, and you cannot build taller than the top of that.
Plus, have you ever gone up in the mountain where all the rich people live? Like, beautiful houses, crazy expensive houses, but you have to be able to overlook everybody, right? You don't want some pleb in an office being able to look back at you at even level, right? Yeah.
And if you want the next Boys Con to be hosted at one of these three-story houses literally carved into the side of a mountain, you can go over to patreon.com/loreboys. we only really need like $5 or $6 million because if we all live together, then it reduces cost, right?
And we just need one of you to give. We just created a new tier for $6 million.
Yeah.
I'm so used to living alone, but if you gave us $6 million, I'd consider having a roommate again.
If we had one of those, like, on-the-mountain mansions, we could still theoretically live alone and, like, not interact for weeks at a time. Those houses are just so big.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You could just put me in the basement. I'd be right at home. And you
guys can do. I was embezzling $10 a month for other Patreon creators. Think I'm not embezzling my $2 million share of that $6 million, like, come on.
Yeah, look at the embezzler. Already got a house, huh?
Yeah. Oh, very suspicious.
Here it is, huh? So I have a quote from you guys.
From you guys, what Kamigawa is.
Peter O'Donoghue, circa 2022. So it's from the Planeswalker's Guide to Kamigawa, a collaborative effort by Grace Fong, Emily Tang, and Ari Zirulnik. Kami and human alike live among its towering skyscrapers. The streets are always packed, no matter the time of day. Prime location along the coast makes it a hub for commerce, and its proximity to the forest provides shelter from the elements. Hovering lanterns and neon lights brighten a lower city that would otherwise be drowned in shadows throughout the day, and those same lights transform the city at night into a beacon of dazzling colors. I think it's fair to say it's pretty if you don't think about the Blade Runner-esque aspect of capitalist hell future too much. But it does have a bit of that too.
Is there a Keanu Reeves type character who smokes cigarettes and tells you about mysterious past things you can't remember?
No, but a lot of people do say samurai. That's okay. Because it's Japanese themed probably more than anything.
Okay.
I definitely said it on last episode. I probably said it on the last two episodes. Like, there's clearly some inspiration from Wizards of the Coast creating this set to capitalize on that Cyberpunk 2077 popularity, right? I do think they did a good job, like, kind of keeping it unique in the fact that they have their own, like, huge, large established canon. Not only in Magic the Gathering, which is huge, but specifically with Kamigawa, like, they really did take, like, this ancient plane that was very, like, feudal Japan hundreds of years ago, and were like, let's fucking rapid accelerate it to the future. And a lot of what we're going to talk about today is kind of the clash between magic and technology in this setting, right? Which is something that Cyberpunk 2077 didn't necessarily have. It did kind of have, like, transcendence in the AI world and all things like that, but similar but different.
I've played 45 minutes of Shadowrun because I find that world very interesting, but those games, the turn-based ones, I just despise. But it's always been a really cool setting, the fantasy sci-fi cyberpunk crossover.
I was listening to a Shadowrun podcast last night, actually. It's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, Traitor. You don't just listen to the lore boys, Jamie?
I try not to as much as possible, but I do most of the editing.
That's the brain.
So I probably listen to the most out of all of us, by just because I have to edit, but that's about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you drop the needle to find the cold open, you are listening to more lore boys than I am, because I listen to precisely none.
Yeah. Except for before Peter used to write down art ideas when he'd have to go back and re-listen to the episode to try and remember what the hell
he
was
about. True. Yeah, I've gotten better at that.
Yeah, we used to work harder, not smarter. I think we used to listen to the whole thing while editing, too. Now I just watch it, and I see, oh, look, did we drop here? Did we spike here? Just think about it. Was there something I wanted to cut? A quote that I wanted to remove, I'll take that out, but I'll leave Ethan's and Peter's in, all the stuff they don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. All the bad things. We all take the liberty. If I'm editing, I'm the only one that's going to sound not offensive on this episode. Okay? So leading to Washi is the Imperials at the Imperial Court by Ganjo Castle, you guys may remember. They were founded by Kyodai when the plane was in need of leadership, and while peaceful means of governments are their prime directive, they're not afraid to bring the hammer down when they need to. Go through Imperial training and you'll have a great list of trades waiting for you, like Samurai, the aforementioned Samurai, Kami Intercessor, who's kind of like a diplomat to deal with Kami, who are integrating into the Imperial world.
You're working for Men in Black, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Moth Rider, which is something that we talked about before in the first episode. The Kamigawa of Takeshi Konda had these like great moths, which they used to ride to battle. Still a thing. They're still moth riders.
Yeah.
And again, that beautiful kind of juxtaposition of the old and the new. You have moth riders followed by mech pilot. So, you know, you can really be whatever you want to be in Neon Dynasty.
There's definitely some like boomer conflict between like the kids. It's just like, you know, it's just like, I'm sure this guy hated like when they switched the moths from standard to automatic, and now they have the mech pilots is even worse.
And if you're just born in the mech pilot life, that you like to leave your headlights on so the moth pilots run into you and stuff.
we can't bring both companies to bear during the night, sir. We'll have to wait till morning to attack. Like, if we turn the headlights on the mechs, then the moths will be attracted to them, but if we don't, then the mechs will crash. So.
We'll send in the moth sappers to eat all of their clothes first, and they'll have to show up to battle naked tomorrow, sir. Don't worry about it.
Moth sappers in a fantasy context is so scary. Like, imagine like having a fire at night and it attracts like this moth that just is gonna blow up or something. You always have to be under the guise of darkness at night.
You launch a flaming trebuchet and then like strap a bunch of C4 to a bunch of moths. And go into battle.
Guys, if we ever get a bunch of lumber we don't know what to do with, can we make a trebuchet? I was watching.
Oh yeah,
I think it'd be so much fun.
We can get the lumber knowing what we're gonna do with it if you want.
That's expensive. Is it expensive to build a trebuchet?
I mean three early life guys working good jobs, so yeah, I think we can afford it.
How big do you want it
is a good question.
Well, like, I want to like see like I want like the rock to go way farther than we thought.
We're gonna price by size. We're gonna get a couple of prices by size.
I'm more worried about the counterweight, because like you could just dump a bunch of gravel into some chicken wire as a counterweight, right? And then have that go. Like, but like, do you want to maybe like launch a basketball and see if we can get it to go swish? Because that would be sweet. Or do you want to fuck something up?
No, I want
two different price points.
I want to see a rock go like so much farther than I ever have seen one go. Like, I want like a 15, 20 foot like trebuchet. I think that would be enough. Like 20 feet, the full swing of that thing with the counterweight would have to be nice and heavy too.
I'm on vacation for a month. If we want to start looking into this, we can.
I don't think we can build a trebuchet that big in the city. I think there's laws against it.
I mean, we'll probably have to do it at my dad's or at Ethan's place.
I wonder if there's zoning laws on trebuchet ownership in the city, right? There's definitely parking rules on it. Like, you couldn't leave it in a parking spot.
Well, you'd have to move it twice a week for the street sweeper.
You'd need a plate. You can't use a parking spot without a license, right?
You know, in Montreal, you can't also have a trebuchet that's taller than the mountain.
That's also true.
Well, Well, I mean, yeah, the mountain just grows, though, so I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. That's you could never shoot a rock over the mountain.
Just land on the plateau, kill some hipster.
So
a chunk of Minas Tirith.
So if you guys were trying to get your trebuchet license with the Imperials, anybody can join. There are plenty of families who have served for generations. We talked about one of them on the last episode who like stopped an assassination of the Emperor and changed how the Emperor was chosen. If you were to sign up, your training would probably take place at Iganjo Castle. It does seem quite large and like a lot of, you know, operations go on there. It's built upon its former site, once destroyed by the great Kami Okagachi, who we talked about in our first episode.
Seven-headed snake or whatever, the big white one?
Yeah, exactly. One eating the Teletubby.
Yes, of course.
in the artwork. It has gotten a bit of a modern facelift, so I threw it in the chat for you guys. I don't know if you want to try and take a crack at describing it. My best way of describing it is it looks like an Overwatch.
It does.
Yep. It does. A lot of neon moldings for some reason. It's either an Overwatch map or like an ASMR girl's wall behind her.
Yeah,
it's with the little light ropes or whatever.
Yeah, a lot of glowing orange neon, and then also like the pagoda rooftop style, you know, and like these they're like white walls, which are supposed to look like traditional plaster walls, I think, but happen to be like metal plates of like sort of technological. Something or other, sci-fi something. So ancient architecture here is preserved as best it can be, but sleek modern structures are also very present. Iganjo is also home to both the Imperial Palace, seat of government, as well as the Shrine of Kyodai, so where that great Kami spirit, Kami of all Kamis, lived.
I looked up which Overwatch map, and it's Li Zhang. There's like Li Zhang Tower, Li Zhang Control Center, Li Zhang Garden, Li Zhang Night Market. Li Zhang is the one that looks like that.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. You gonna play Overwatch 2, Jamie?
No, I like Blizzard, man. I like Overwatch 1, but I'm gonna try not to help them out anymore. Yeah.
So from the walls of the castle, you might spot Bosaiju, which we've talked about a bit. Which kind of this great, like Pete described, it looks like a bonsai
tree. Yeah.
Even though a bonsai isn't like a type of tree, it's like a way of pruning a tree to keep it small. This is quite large.
Really.
Yeah, bonsai is like the art of trimming a regular tree to look small, basically.
Huh.
So yeah, it's this like great like massive tree which sprawls over the city. I did mention the spirit dragons that incubated in it for a bit. Its branches dwarf the surrounding skyscrapers, and the area like along its trunk acts and at its base acts as a base acts as a balance, excuse me, between the artificial and the natural.
Have the dragons been priced out at this point now that all these yuppie towers are being put in?
Gentrified too hard, yeah. I didn't go any further into depth on the dragons for this episode, so I don't know what they're up to these days, honestly. Sent you guys another picture, just kind of what the Bosaiju district might look like. A lot of like tree houses, rolling waterfalls, things like that. Very nature-like, but it is in the center of this like hyper-modern city.
Oh, it looks like a recipe for water damage, to be honest. Just waterfalls everywhere. Everything's wet.
I'd rather be here. I like the... I know we like talked about, like joked about it earlier. I like the little kind of like disc-shaped Jetsons pods that everybody lives in inside the little...
They look like, cozy. They look like you could, you know, I don't know. They're so small.
Windows all around, though? I don't know. There might be a thing for privacy there. Unless you... I guess you just get the accordion.
But they're all at different heights. Right? So nobody can really see straight in. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all staggered.
So I can still have sex on the floor is what you're saying.
Exactly. Or the ceiling. So the Bosaiju district, built onto the side of the Great Tree, exists as a haven for those seeking to be in touch with nature. It's like really like, hey, we talked about it a bit last time, but it's like, hey, no more modern developments, like no more developments in the forest. You know, it's off limits kind of thing. And of course, to parallel the dizzying heights of Bosaiju, no fantasy city would be complete without an undercity. This one is called the Undercity. Right?
That's cool. I know my way around there really well.
not the WoW one. It's a little different. It's a lot. It's very much like the bleaker areas in Cyberpunk. It's just that where you find like a bunch of Maelstrom gangers. would be the Undercity. It exists in perpetual twilight, cast by the shadow of the Great Tree and the towering skyscrapers that surround it. The Tawashi Undercity is a dangerous place, largely controlled by the gangs we call it home. So that's your the table has been set, you know, dinner's ready. It's in this fast-moving city that our story begins.
Okay.
So as I said earlier, it starts with two scientists hard at work in Tawashi Labs. There was a terrible accident, and both of the scientists were exposed to a dangerous amount of radiation. What made this scientific accident somewhat unique, other than radiation poisoning, is that the two scientists were married. Isn't that nice?
Whoa, how can two men be married?
Oh, yeah. I can operate on this radioactive block. It's my son. It's the old riddle, right?
I like how many assumptions are baked into how can two men be married and both are scientists. Yeah. Like only men can be scientists and also they can't be gay people. Yeah. Can't be married. Yeah,
but they're like the Curies, the people who discovered radium, like Mary and Philip Curie were married scientists and both died of radiation poisoning.
Exactly.
No way.
Mary Curie used to carry around little vials of radium because she thought it was neat, and she used to like show it off at parties.
Oh my god.
And her body is still too radioactive to not be in an enclosed vacuum. So
that's crazy.
There was some other thing called like the radium girls, where like radium was in some kind of like foundation or some form of makeup that given out to women in like the 30s and 40s or something.
Radium girls was the girls who worked with it, and because it was because you'd paint with radium to make that, glow in the dark lines.
Yeah. Excuse me.
They'd be painting products because that was a woman's job, painting, of course.
Right. They had little hands.
Not plowing fields. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
A lot of them ended up super radioactive as well. Yeah. So not only were they married, they had two young children, twins. So the wife received more radiation than the husband, it seemed. It seemed like she wasn't going to make it, and he was a little better off, I guess. Like any true to form cyberpunk-esque capitalist hellscape, it seems like readily available medical care was not a given. You know, all the technology in the world, and you're still gonna let somebody die because they don't. So the father turns to black market medical technology to try and save his wife, which was illegal at the time, because hence black market.
Yeah,
was arrested for it and thrown into prison.
You're gonna die of radiation poisoning in jail instead of naturally or in the hospital, because that would be ridiculous.
He succumbs to his wounds alone in prison shortly before his wife died.
Oh.
Their children, Kaito and his sister Aiko, would grow up as orphans in the Imperial Palace, being trained to become the very force which threw their father into prison for trying to save his dying wife.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know what we can do with these orphans who we created, the state? turn them into narcs.
I mean, pretty germane to a lot of stuff happening right now.
Yeah.
Kaito and Aiko were both brought up to serve, and Aiko took to the Imperial lifestyle much quicker than her twin brother. They learned under a kindly kitsune known as Light Paws. The kitsune, if you guys remember, are the fox people. We talked about eight and a half tails. Light Paws has two tails, for reference. Light Paws is a personal advisor to the emperor, who had served training young wards in the palace for many generations of emperor now. Basically, they had set themselves apart as distinguished. They live much longer than humans, so there's been this kind of like guide to the emperor for many generations now. And one of their tasks is deciding what to do with the orphans that get raised in the Imperial Palace. It's never made clear like which orphans get chosen for being raised in the Imperial Palace. I'm gonna guess Kaito and Aiko were chosen because it was a PR nightmare if they just like sent them off to some hovel somewhere. Like that's a problem that you've just shuffled 30 years down the line for when they're adults, right?
Also, if they're doing any type of like testing or anything, twins are really valuable, right?
So Kaito was known for taking his lessons flippantly, wandering the rooftops between them, which apparently were under patrolled, which we'll talk again about later, but it seems like a security risk to just like let an orphan walk around on the rooftops of the Imperial Palace. He'd sit atop the palace's buildings, sometimes with a snack stolen from the cafeteria, and watch the loyal samurai and imperial surveillance mechs patrolling the courtyards below.
I really like the idea of having a imperial palace cafeteria that is just as bad as a cafeteria you're probably imagining right now, with like the aluminum lids and just like everything steamy all the time. Like everything's damp. Oh, yeah. What do you have, your majesty?
I mean, that's
ladle of cream corn just straight onto the imperial platter that is encrusted with jewelry.
I mentioned stealing like sitting up there with a stolen snack from the cafeteria specifically because the first story of Kaito, the Kaito origin, starts with him like visiting the cafeteria and like stealing a snack using his telekinesis. He's telekinetic. I think I mentioned it in a couple paragraphs, but it does like specific, like that's how the story kind of begins. And that's exactly like the chef or the cook of the cafeteria is like, "Hey, you, what are you doing stealing my sausage rolls again? Get out of here," before he like runs off and goes and hangs out on the jobs. So his sister Aiko was receptive to Lightpaw's teachings and just generally the imperial lifestyle. Like I said, she was soon chosen to train as a kami diplomat, one who would not only treat with the spirit realm, but also help the Order of Jugen in calming the enraged kami periodically arrive unexpectedly. Her brother, less obedience, doesn't have the patience for diplomacy. He does prove to be capable of the blade. He was naturally fast. And like I said, he has a bit of magic, mainly telekinesis.
Okay.
After training with Lightpaws for a time, she had him lined up to be a samurai, but had to acknowledge his skills with a sword. The emperor at the time, chosen by Kyodai as all were, was about the same age as Kaito. The emperor's like a 9-year-old child. And the emperor was in need of a sparring partner. So Lightpaws pairs them up together, perhaps hoping that the emperor's calm demeanor would calm Kaito as much as his skills would part on her. My best guess as to why he would choose this rather than like an adult to serve as the, I guess it's just a sparring partner, not the sword master, but what can you do?
Makes sense. So like by the time you're an adult, you're probably gonna be fighting people who are the same size as you and stuff. So it's just like scaling your sparring partner down to similar skills. It's just, why not?
Yeah.
Plus, it's one less orphan to keep an eye on. You can just...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just leave you unattended with the emperor. That won't require any extra security. you guys go hang out on the roof so we don't have to watch either of you, would you? Yeah. So over the years, they spar together. The young orphan and the young emperor become friends. Despite Kato's reluctance at being a pawn of the Imperials, he does find himself like, hey, here's another kid that's not my sister that I can interact with. It does seem like there's not a lot of other orphans or children in the Imperial Palace. It does seem like the three that I've found mention of are Kaito, Aiko, and the Emperor, basically. So,
okay.
It's probably nice for that reason, and they do get along quite well and become pretty fast friends.
Daycare's at the bottom of the fucking tree, kids. Get out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we want every telekinetic orphan here stealing our 2-bite brownies from the calf? Yeah. Fuck no.
I guess I could clarify. The emperor is a girl, which emperor apparently is a gender-neutral term, whereas empress is the wife of an emperor specifically. But there's
what?
No...
Really?
There's no, yeah, I mean, can be used. You can use empress as an empress, but it can also mean not. And specifically in Kamigawa... In Tawashi, emperor is a gender neutral term. So it was Emperor Michiko Kanda as well on like the last episode.
The first
like president.
Yeah, the first lady or also the presidentress.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Just like the president, Mr. Emperor. Mr. Emperor Michiko Kanda.
Presidentress Jill Biden is what we currently have.
But all the more so like, I guess leaving them together at such like a formative time in their life.
They're going to get horny.
must cause some tensions, right? So one day while they're still relatively young, Kaito was idling on a rooftop watching as a train rolled into Iganjo Station, surrounded by mechs made to resemble origami animals patrolling the platform.
He's just like that. He's just so, he's really into trains, like the guy who has the camera on his face.
Exactly. He's that. TikTok guy or YouTube guy. Yeah,
I just had him on Instagram. I can't remember his name now, but he's hilarious. He's got like a French name. But
Google funny train guy and it'll come up.
Oh, camera angle, funny camera angle train guy. And for sure, I've done it in the past. Yeah.
I love the idea that they have origami styled mechs, which is so function over, or like, or it's so form over function.
Yeah.
Opposed, it's just like, oh yeah, like it can't walk forwards through a door because the iron crane wings on it are, you know, just there, so it has to like shuffle through everything. Or they've got, like, for the interrogation, do they think they have the cootie catcher, Max?
Okay. We're going to find out if you committed this murder. Now give me a color.
Shrink.
A number.
Now a number.
Yeah. It'd be really funny if the mechs, like, by law, have to only be made out of one piece of sheet metal. Like, they have to be all folded together, everything. Yeah.
I mean, I can only assume, right? We'd make them pretty stiff, I think, but...
Yeah.
So he's watching the train roll in. The train itself was bore futurists from the floating city of Otawara, come to speak with the Emperor's advisors. It's basically this city in the sky, which was home to the Moonfolk originally, now is open to all, although it still does have a palace, which is exclusively for Moonfolk. Talk briefly about the Moonfolk. They're like pale-skinned people. We have met on past episodes, not even past Kamigawa episodes, but Tamiyo. In the Innistrad episodes, I want to say, we talked about a bit. She's a Moonfolk from Kamigawa, presumably. I didn't get into her lore too much, but we will eventually. So there's these futurists who are coming to speak with the Emperor. The Saiba futurists of Kamigawa are the predominant drivers of technology on the plane. Their directive is to push the boundaries of technology while ostensibly remaining neutral in politics. According to policy, they obey imperial restrictions on technological development, but only as any good capitalist would. They push the boundaries, toe the legal, moral, and ethical lines of what should and should not be done in the name of progress. You know the type.
They have lobbyists, clearly.
Yeah, that's exactly like what this train is these futurists coming to commission or lobby the Emperor to allow certain technologies. Again, that, you know, the life-saving radiation tech that Kaito's parents bought on the black market is probably approved or could be approved by now or something like that. It might have just been restricted in the past. The Imperials do take a pretty firm stance on slowing the advancement of technology in the name of, like, hey, we don't know what could happen. You know, we don't want people making unreasonable weapons with this technology. Like, it's happening too fast. We have unlimited energy sources, so kind of anybody in their garage can just start making, like, nuclear bombs, basically. Mm-hmm. So, like...
Okay, yeah.
There is some logic to the slowing it and putting a lot of legal brakes on it, and you see with Kaido's parents the exact like downfall of that, the people who are left to die in the name of rules and regulation.
If we all had trebuchets, where would we park them all, right?
Like... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If we all had trebuchets, where would all the moths go? Because everyone would be shooting flaming boulders around the city. you'd confuse the moths too much, you know. So it can be argued that the futurist inventions have improved overall quality of life on the plane. They do hoard the best technologies for themselves to maintain their status. It's like, we're the technology guy. You know, we're Apple. You know, no, you can't have access to our... You're not allowed to repair your own goddamn iPhone because we're Apple. And we have to be able to be the ones to charge you to repair our iPhone or whatever.
Right.
To buy your Apple Care. So they don't even necessarily all work together. The futurists... does seem to be like a corporation in a sense, but it's like split into like multiple divisions, each headed by its own chief. Many of them are shrouded in a thick cloak of mystery, going so far as to employ spies to protect their project's own secrets and steal from other projects.
Cool.
So it is still very much like, yeah, like it's very much the corporate, like, hey, we're not a company, we're a family. And it's like, yeah, but if I get the infinite money printing device, like, it's for me, jackass. So,
yeah, okay.
Fuck you, you know?
Yeah.
Like any good company. So for the most part, the futurists don't like to rely on Kami to power their devices. While some may have consulted with the Kami in the past, they typically like to rely on science over magic. It's not true of all futurists, but, like, by and large, this is the, we don't need the Kami. I don't care what happens to them. Come through the merge gates. Don't come through the merge gates. Just let us focus on our iPhones and things like that.
Yeah, it's the based Moonfolk, basically.
Exactly. And then, you know, whereas the Imperials are kind of trying to regulate the line between the two and just kind of put the stops on everyone, we'll get to some people who are more like, hey, let's just, like, full steam ahead, merge them both, and then we'll get to some people who are, well, the Order of Jugen, who we covered last time, are probably the more like, we should just let the Kami do what they want. Technology is always bad,
yeah.
Right? As Kaito sat watching the distant train, he noticed that one futurist seemed to have arrived sooner than the rest. A moonfolk hovering several inches above the grass with blue light glowing across their chest had arrived in the garden. So I have a picture of this fella for you guys, just because I think he's handsome. But he does have a lot of these origami cranes, like Peter mentioned earlier, but on a much smaller scale than a mech, I guess you could say. And he's a moonfolk, so Kaito's sitting on the roof watching this train, then he notices, like, down in the gardens, there's one of these futurists just kind of sitting in the garden.
They look much more ridiculous than I assumed, like, as, like the moonfolk, that is, because this guy is dressed as, like, a combination...
he's dressed as a clown
and court jester.
Yeah, he's dressed as a clown, and they don't all dress like this. But this guy in this picture certainly did. That's for
okay.
So the man grabs something, a small metal triangle from his shoulder. It unfolds itself into a small metal crane, then takes off into the clouds. Now, why is this important? Outside tech is forbidden within Aiganjo's walls. Like, you can't just
He's bugging it.
Yeah, you can't just bring in your robot crane into the palace without declaring, right? And then we're going to check you on the way out to make sure that you still have this.
How many times do you have to fold something until it becomes tech?
Eight.
That's the seventh that you can't
exactly.
Do it.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the big hurdle that science is encountering right now.
Oh, yeah. We built our flying city entirely based off 8 times folded paper, and we're not going to share the secret with you.
So Kaito, seeing this, and despite being, like, generally, you know, uninterested in the Imperials, does seem to have some kind of penchant for, like, doing the right thing. So he sneaks up behind this man and accuses him of do-no-goodery. Despite being so aggro, the two actually bond. It turns out that the futurist's parents had died in a toxic spill at work in the Undercity one day. Sound familiar?
Oh. Wow. So I'll ignore the fact that that the serial number on this origami crane has been ground off. You can just get away with that.
Exactly. It seems like this guy, he tells this story of, like, he explains that if only the sensors at the factory had been up to date, maybe his parents would have lived. You know, Kaido ends up sharing his story. He says, yeah, if your parents had access to the life-saving technology that they needed, that your dad had, perhaps they'd still be here, and neither of you nor your sister would have grown up orphans. Which, like, man, as an orphan, must hit you, right? Must just be like, damn, that's a good-ass point, dude. The man finally introduces himself as Katsumasa and left him with one of the origami drones he had sent into the sky. So a little bit later, we're going to tell some stories of Kaito when he's a bit older. And all of those stories, you can assume he's built this, like, bracelet where the origami drone can, like, come to rest. And then he can, like, send it out and he can, like, do surveillance through its eyes. He has, like, a little Google smart lenses or whatever, Google lenses that he can see through his crane's eyes.
Stupid fucking glasses.
Oh. Yeah.
It's like a familiar in D&D. You can, like, send him off.
Yeah, exactly,
So, it's Laserbeak from Transformers, like the cassette that pops out of that guy's chest. It's just like spies on people.
Yeah, exactly. So Kaido keeps the conversation secret, the conversation that he had with the futurist secret. He doesn't tell his sister, he doesn't tell the Emperor, he doesn't tell Lightpaws. You know, a couple of reasons why. Like, he mentions how he'd never told the story of, like, what happened to his parents. Like, he didn't talk about it with his sister, he didn't talk about it with the Emperor. And, like, the fact that he was candid with this guy just made him feel, like, weird. It felt like a strange betrayal, even though, like, he didn't do anything, but it did kind of seed that, like, early thoughts of, like, oh, maybe this isn't just, like, the perfect happy-go-lucky place to grow up without parents. So he doesn't outright say it, but he does start to share some of those ideas with the Emperor. That, like, hey, you know, like, maybe if people had X, maybe we should, like, let clinical trials go through and quicker, you know, so people can get access to life-saving medicine who might need it. You know, let dying people sign up to be the clinical trials or whatever, right? Because, like, they're gonna die anyway. Yeah. So he's, like, kind of imparting some of these ideas on the Emperor. There are others close to the Emperor, of course, who don't look kindly on people who are whispering radical ideas into the ears of their leader, though. Course,
like healthcare? Right?
Yeah, like, hey, there's this, like, great industry we have where people are, like, really, really sick, and we don't want them getting too much access to medical aid at any given time. So you should probably shut up, kid. You know.
Oh my god.
Lightpaws separates them once more, confronting Kaito finally and demanding that they choose their path in life. His sister had agreed to become a Kami diplomat. Kaito had never fully committed to saying like, yeah, I'll be an Imperial Samurai. You know, he's never said like, yeah, when I grow up, I'll be a soldier. I'll enter the academy and I'll start doing that. At this point, he's really just like, he's taken some classes. He's the Emperor's sparring partner. And Lightpaws is like, okay, it's time for you to commit now. If you're going to keep, if you're going to be part of the Imperial life and like have the ear of the Emperor, we need to indoctrinate.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't go well. He says no, basically. He says he's not ready to. He lists a lot of the reasons that Katsumasa had kind of imparted on him that like, hey, you know, we're not doing things the right way. And I don't think that things should be this way. I don't believe in what the Imperial doctrine stands for, I guess. So that night, Kaito is lying in bed trying to find a good night's sleep while also being unsure if he has a home tomorrow. So he's already awake when alarms blare through the palace.
Whoa.
But more on that after the break.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The sirens blared in Iganjo Castle and Kaito flew out of bed, grabbing his crane drone on the way out the door. He was heading to check on his sister, Aiko, when someone informed him there was an intruder in the palace, an upriser. Hearing that, he's like, well, if they're uprisers, they're probably not going for my sister, right? So who are the uprisers? The Asari uprisers were a rebel faction opposed to imperial rule in Kamigawa. They, not unlike Katsumasa, believe that power and technology shared, not hoarded, and often clashed with the imperial. So these are the guys who are like, yeah, no, these are the libertarians. No rules and restrictions. Everybody okay. should be able to do whatever they want with
cannabis. They put the who's gonna pay for the giant tree is the question. The other's like, oh, well, I'm stumped. And then everyone laughs and they get 2% of the vote.
Yeah.
They put the Kami in Kamigawa. It was on the table, I had to say it.
Yeah.
Dab.
So an attack on the palace was bold, even for the uprisers. But I suppose not unheard. Like I said, regardless, Kaito knew they wouldn't be looking for Aiko, but he was thinking of his friend, the Emperor, even if he's, you know, not necessarily, like I said, loyal to Imperial doctrine, it's still his friend.
Radicals have broken into the palace. Who do you think they're going to go for? Well, I mean, that should be obvious, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
The two-bite brownies.
Yeah.
They're going to the cafeteria. They're going to get the cream corn and the two-bite brownies.
He can't defend himself.
The commies think two-bite brownies should be shared. Like, one bite, one bite according to his ability, one bite according to his means.
One bite per household. But there's four of us, you make it work. So, at this point, again, this story makes a point of mentioning that while Iganjo Castle was well defended, the rooftops were often unsupervised, which makes it seem like it wasn't well defended. Kaito, having experience, is like, I'm going by the rooftops, obviously, you know? That's how I can get there fast. That's how I know where to go.
You jump over the electric, like the invisible dog fence from there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you need to get down quickly, you can jump from the corner and there'll be an eagle screech and you'll land in a pile of hay and lose all aggro.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you're lucky, one of the enemies will be right there and you can just assassinate from the pile of hay.
Yes. You only took that out in the later Assassin's Creed games. You cannot do that in Odyssey, where as soon as you land in the pile of hay, your character just jumps out.
Oh, yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. Weird. Haven't played since 3.
Don't.
even 3, I didn't play very much. I played 3 a tiny bit. Oh, no, I played 4 a tiny
bit. Black Flag, good, but...
I played 1 and 2. It was, they were great.
I played the Egypt one with... That was good. I liked it. Origin. Yeah. With, I forget whose name.
Bayek.
Yeah, I felt more like an RPG. You could, like, level up and shit, and yeah, it was cool.
I'm screwed one day, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Kaito, obviously, within the Animus, is stealing across the rooftops towards the Emperor's Chamber.
Yeah.
Again, apparently you can just access the Emperor's Balcony from these unguarded rooftops. So he gets there, he jumps onto a balcony, finds the door ajar. So it seems like maybe somebody else also figured out that the rooftops aren't guarded because the balcony is
a goofy plot hole. Because, like, this makes you think of Dishonored, right? Like, when you want to go assassinate the Lord Regent, you can just blink onto a chandelier, onto his balcony, and if his AI cycle has, like, randomly started there, you can kill him in, like, 40 seconds.
Hmm.
In a game, or, like, in a world where they don't assume people have teleportation magic or can fly, they're just like, yeah, we don't need to put an electric dog fence around the Emperor's balcony. But in a place where there is a fly, like, a tree and flying cities above them, the fact that what do you have, like a French door with the swing lock on it? And it's like, all right, that's good enough for the Emperor, I guess.
Yeah. If French doors in Quebec, we just call them doors.
Exactly.
That is true, yeah. They're always, I hate how much they smell. But inside, the room was empty, with no sign of the Emperor or an intruder, but in the distance, a scream sound. It was coming from Kyodai Shrine, a place that... Kaito knew of, but where he had never been. Inside, he saw the great... So he runs towards it. Inside, he sees the great Kami thrashing in the hot springs of her home with an eerie fog spread across the entirety of the room. If you guys remember Kyodai, it's like the weird, like, golden dragon in that, like, hot spring with, like, the three faces on its front, yes. Basically.
Yeah. Right.
A detail that I didn't notice the first time, but when I was reading the description in this artwork, and I'll actually see if I can... find the image again for you guys from the other one. If you guys, I don't know if you can go close enough, but you see how it's like, it almost looks like hairy along the body and along the legs?
Oh, yeah.
Those are actually human arms. Or human shaped arms, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hanging off its body, which
I thought was pretty cool. They look kind of like, this might be like too specific for you, your guys' imagination, or like any normal person, but they look like ostrich or like emu feathers. Like, you know, like a fuzzy big bird. Because mm-hmm. I thought it was like fuzzy.
Yeah, no, me too. That was my gut instinct that I was reading this story, and they at some point later on describe, or it might have been here actually, they describe the fact that it's got like these arms coming off all over its body.
It still looks fuzzy to me. I really need to get my eyes fixed.
In the live episode last weekend, that Jamie definitely needs glasses. He has booked himself a visit for the optometrist.
Yeah,
or he just looked at availability.
So no, I booked one
first week of August, right?
Yeah, the closest one I can find is over a month away, and other places were booked like 2 months up. Like people, they neglected their eyes during COVID, just like I did, I guess.
Well, listen, you don't need to drive this week, honestly, for someone without glasses and no car. Like, waiting 8 weeks to see an optometrist doesn't really seem that bad.
Yeah, exactly. I just gotta squint whatever I'm on my computer for. That's all right.
Just get the dollar store like bifocals that like old ladies read like smutty airport novels in.
Right.
You don't need prescriptions for like reading glasses. And you can also, I mean, on your, he's pulling out Dan Brown Inferno. He's got his airport novel.
He's ready to beat off, baby.
Yeah. You can also just, go full boomer and just go with like 0.18 font on your computer. Right.
I'm thinking about it. Thinking about it.
Yeah. So Kaito runs to Kyodai Shrine, where Kyodai, the great Kami, is on its back thrashing on the ground. Oh, don't know what happened to it. Across the room, a man dressed in chrome armor, unlike anything Kaito has ever seen, with a clawed metallic arm, also like nothing Kaito has ever seen, also glowing with this purplish-pink energy, unlike, you guessed it, anything Kaito has seen, locks eyes with the young orphan before fleeing out the door.
That's very cool, though.
There's a chase scene. I mean, fans of Magic the Gathering who aren't familiar with this story might be screaming at their radio right now, the name of this person because it's probably a guessable character.
Well, so, it's got to come back, right? Like if you have that locked eyes moment with the main character, you're mm-hmm. more huge power, like more powerful than anything before. You have that I got in.
Two guesses. Yeah.
For all the people listening at home, we're not going to get to it today. So
it's like when Ash sees.
We're just going to mask off.
Ash sees Ho-Oh in the very first episode of Pokemon. And we don't even get that Ho-Oh come back around until second gen, you know? Like,
yeah.
So we might be waiting a little while. Who knows?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, obviously at the beginning of Pokemon Yellow, you walk into Professor Oak's lab and he's writhing on the floor. And a golden bird flies out the window and you don't get to catch up to
it. What happens?
Pokemon Silver.
Ash gets caught in like a storm of a certain type of Pokemon and then like crashes his
Spearows.
Spearows, yeah. He crashes his bike and then there's a rainbow and Ho-Oh flies over and that's the end of episode one of Pokemon, yeah.
Yeah, and it kicks into Hey Digimon, champions of the digital world.
And then the next one starts ring, phone call, and he's there and he sees Ho-Oh is like on one of these like mystic, oh, never mind. Pokemon later, guys.
What?
This is describing. We'll do a watch party podcast of all the Pokemon anime.
How about
at
I
some
just
point.
Describe them from memory to you guys?
So
sounds better to me.
If like I've been looking for like a second, I guess in this case a third source of income, we can do a Arnold Schwarzenegger on every movie he's ever done style DVD commentary of Jamie watching Pokemon. If you've ever listened to any of Arnie's he just describes the scene he is watching and that's it. No insight whatsoever. Like there is no behind the scenes content. It's like DV. It's for like blind people basically, but like he's just like doing it himself.
I like this and we have completely jumped out of this very tense moment of the story to like fully background pitch a new podcast because clearly this one's not working for us.
No.
So I really like the idea of me and Peter watch all the Pokemon episodes and then Jamie tries to recite them all from memory.
That's a great fucking idea.
Away, right? Well, one thing that's come up in the past is this, like, I'm not a big Star Wars fan. Jamie describes all the Star Warses but has never seen them.
Yeah.
And, that could be good too.
But I've got some catching up to do, but that'd be a cute little mini series, I think.
Okay. Well, okay, so we leave off. Makes eye contact. Our Kato boy, Roof Walker, makes contact with this guy covered in Google Chrome armor, and he's glowing.
He's got the yellow, he's got the red, he's got the green, and then he's got the blue center right in the middle.
Right. And there's a Firefox writhing on the ground behind him.
He takes out his katana, Microsoft Edge.
Okay. Man, I might be able to do the artwork this time.
I every time I see your arms go forward, so I'm just like, Ethan's got this one. I don't need to write that down.
I'm saying I might be able to do the artwork. I might be able to bust out GIMP and take this background, put a Firefox Google Chrome logo, and then a Microsoft Edge logo.
Well, you did the Ahiago Moon for Patreon last week, so go for it, dude.
he sees this man. The man flees. Kaido is unable to catch them, but he does know one thing: that was no Upriser. Again, the arm and the chrome was too sci-fi. The purple energy was too strange. It's like nothing he's ever seen before, and he hasn't seen Uprisers firsthand. He's heard stories. He's seen pictures. He's whatever. He's like, that's like something out of this world.
Should we end right there?
I think it's a planeswalker, personally. It's my guess for the next episode. Like, I'm planting that seed right now because I'm going to forget.
After my out of this world pun, Pete locks in planeswalker. Jamie, you got anything but planeswalker, so what are you going to take?
Well, he's the first pink or purple card in the Magic the Gathering world.
Oh, that's how they introduce it.
Yeah, because they have pink and purple energy like pulsing around them, right?
It's a pink and purple lands, basically.
Yeah, they're just like, it's just blue, red. And they're like, no, it's new. Fuck off.
It's just, that'd be called, is it? Kaito tries to tell Lightbuzz and the other Imperials who had arrived at the stunned Kyodai Shrine. And they did believe that it didn't seem like the work of Upriser. They believed that Saiba Futurist must have kidnapped the Emperor to force her to change the laws.
Did you say cyber like a guy from Boston there?
Cyber. Cyber futurists with lasers and whatnot. Mm. Kaido is like fervently against the idea that this is futurist. Again, it's just too foreign, even for the futurist. This is like nothing he's ever seen. He's like, I got a fucking robot crane on my arm, and this guy was like channeling the fourth dimension, you know?
Okay.
He speaks up, but his teacher will not listen to him. Instead, Light Paws asked Kaido to leave and told him this was an imperial matter. Again, the night before, he had just said, I'm not an imperial. I'm going to leave, basically. So Light Paws is just like, hey, if you're not an imperial, then this isn't for you. Get the fuck out of here.
Thus we offer you jurisdiction and you turned it down, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we promise you, what is it, qualified immunity? And you said
oh,
no.
Yeah.
So
get the fuck out of here.
So thus ends Kaido's life in the Imperial Palace. If you guys were a young orphan in a busy, unforgiving city.
Undercity.
Okay, thank you. Jamie's at one. Pete's locked in for a potential one next episode, if we all remember. he finds himself in the Undercity before too long. Lost and alone, he quickly falls afoul of the Reckoners, a loose organization of gangs which ruled the Undercity.
Reckoners.
Luckily for him, it was just a debt he had to pay, easily done by picking up the odd job here and there. So he does something to piss off a crime boss or, you know, a member of a gang. And the crime boss says, like, hey, yeah, whatever. You know, you cross the gang, but do a little work for us and we'll forgive you. You know, yeah, the classic
economy's shit.
Yeah, the classic honeypot. Am I right? Yeah. The history of the Reckoners as a loose name for an organization apparently traces back to before the Kami War. We didn't really talk about them on our first episode, but we could have. So they go well into the past. The Kyozen Reckoners, as they're sometimes known. More commonly just known as the Reckoners now, by at least one metric, are the most progressive group on Kamigawa. They're also, like the Uprisers, not against the use of either magic or technology. They're just like, hey, whatever's going to make me a buck. As long as there's money to be made, they're willing to use whatever they have at hand. They're not uniform. There's a wide host of gangs and bosses under the Reckoner umbrella, similar to the Futurists, and they often devolve into fights against one another over turf, property, or just bad blood.
I picture them all like patch one cyberpunk, by the way, where they just walk around the town, but if they
T-posing.
Get yeah if they approach something like stairs, they just turn around and walk the other way.
The leader of the Reckoners, was one Satoru Umezawa, whose name will sound familiar to many people who aren't named James or Peter.
I think Umezawa sounds kind of familiar for some reason.
Can you remember why? For the bonus points? Tie it up with Jamie. Put yourself back in pole position.
It was in the Kamigawa episodes?
Yes, it was in the Kamigawa
episodes. One of the dragons?
The Reckoners were also briefly mentioned in regards to human at some point. Umezawa shares the name of Toshi Umezawa, whom in our first Kamigawa episode saved the Empress Michiko Konda and betrayed the Myojin of Knights. He was the samurai who betrayed the gangs of the mountains, ended up finding the young woman and ended up protecting her and helping her to get into a position. He's the one who stole the disc containing Kyodai. You remember the Myojin of Night's Reach gave him the ability to teleport anywhere and escape from any enemy. And he used that to basically fuck the Myojin of Night's Reach over.
Right.
A crime for which he does get banished to Dominaria too. I said on the last episode that maybe we'll do a Toshi Umezawa episode someday. Right. I don't know how likely that is to happen at this point, just because like we're getting five deep into Kamigawa as it is without even touching him. But it's a cool story. Like I said in the first episode, if anybody wants to go read it, it is available online.
None of what we talk about is available online except for through the Lore Boys podcast.
You gotta like read all these short stories. That doesn't sound nearly as fun as listening to us retell them badly, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With breaks to talk about what happened in the first two episodes of Pokemon.
Like we said it before. That's the people are here for that, not for what I'm saying. They're here for that. So it's Satoru Umezawa is the leader of the Reckoners, like the head crime boss, this descendant of Toshi Umezawa.
Okay.
Part of the initiation rites for a Reckoner is something called a loyalty tattoo. It's a standard tattoo, except for one little detail. If you betray Satoru, the mark will eat into your flesh and kill you slowly and painfully.
Oh, that's
cool.
Very cool. I have the loyalty card at our local grocery store.
You never go to another grocery store, dude.
Yeah. You are never shop anywhere else.
Dude, fuck off, Piggly Wiggly. Hang up time. I'm loyal. Profit or die.
It's such a ripoff. Like, I feel like I've spent over $1,000 and I still haven't gotten like $10 back. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's back, right? Like, it's free money. It's the idea.
Yeah.
So always worth, but it's bullshit. It's like the, you know, the whatever, you get 2% back on your credit card.
If I value my time, though, the minimum wage to have to hear someone say, do you have a loyalty card, and then pull it out? If I could just have all that time back in my life, I could make more money than just having to deal with that, is what I'm saying.
Probably.
I gotta download the Super C app at some point.
You can always pull your card out before you go to the account.
I do. I'm very efficient. I pack my own bags and everything. I'm in and out, dude. But
still, in and out.
Yeah.
So luckily for our young orphan, the Reckoner's ID, the Provigo loyalty card, has an age limit. So they do card, I guess, the Reckoners. Oh. And he's too young to be fully initiated. So they won't initiate him at 15 or whatever. Yeah, I think he's 15 when he joins the Reckoners.
Okay, no tattoos until you're 18. I see.
I think it's 16 is when they'll like start considering it. But if you're 18 and you haven't gotten the tattoo yet, you might as well just be an enemy.
Okay,
You can kill people for money when you're 18, but you can't get the tattoo till you're 21, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And before 15 to 18, you just hang around the bar and go buy smokes when people run out, kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly. So, I mean, that's a lot of what his work to start is. He's like a pickpocket, mainly. So it's a lot of like nonviolent stuff, just like small time things. You know, a year or so, he works as this kind of pickpocket. You know, whatever, run and get some smokes, refill the kegs kind of guy. He uses many of the skills he'd learned in the palace to survive far below it. But he's not going to just survive for too long. He's gonna thrive. Your boy's going to thrive, okay?
All right.
After spending a year working for the Reckoners, Kaido had come to realize that their intelligence network was unparalleled even by the Empire, especially when it came to shadowy figures with strange robotic arms.
Ooh.
If anyone could help him get to the person who had kidnapped his friend, it was the Reckoners, though he knew that they likely wouldn't do it willingly. There is like a strange man behind the curtain, Empire assassin. There might even be a good chance that he was working with the Reckoners at some point, right? So he's kind of like towing this line of like, he's going to use the Reckoners as much as he can. He keeps kind of like taking these jobs that get progressively more and more, dangerous or violent gang-like behavior. There is like a scene in the story where he completes a pickpocket mission, is going back to return it to the boss, and one of the others confronts him and is like, well, like, you just stole what you were going to steal. Like, you didn't send a message, you didn't kick the shit out of the guy, you know, blah blah blah. And it kind of turns into this thing, I guess. Right after which Satoru Umezawa, the big guy, calls him into the office, basically says the same thing, and is like, yeah, like, you know, you don't have your loyalty mark yet, you're rising in the ranks, like, I want to know, are you really legit, can you really, are you really a Reckoner, basically.
Yeah. And you didn't rough him up at all, like, are you qualified really to be a Walmart greeter if you didn't rough him up on his way in?
Yeah, exactly.
You ride or die.
If you're not ready to throw down in the parking lot and rip someone's, you know, wig off, then you're not ready to work at Walmart, thank you very much.
Did that happen recently?
I don't know. I can only assume it happens every day.
Yeah. There's a lot of Walmarts. So, yeah, that's definitely at least I'd say 4 or 5 times a day thing. Easy.
So Kaito meets Satoru, who's like, hey, dude, are you really a Reckoner? But also recognizes how good Kaito is at being a thief. Like, he does recognize the merit there. So even if he's like not a Reckoner yet, he's not willing to like straight up like put it to a head and be like, yeah, you got to get the fucking tattoo, because he doesn't know what's going to happen. So he's like, he has valued Kaito as a thief. So the boss gives him a job, high profile, a new target, a moonfolk futurist. who had some schematics that Satoru wanted for the Reckoning.
The schematics are all folded up into an origami.
He folded them many times. I can't get them unfolded, David.
like one drop of sweat hits the tip. He's like... It's like diffusing a bomb. It's like, is it a left fold or a right fold? It's like, I don't know.
What color are you seeing now in the cookie catcher? I'm seeing red and yellow. I see all...
Lift the blue tab. No, the red tab.
How many times did you switch sides? I can't remember.
He's in like the EOD shit. It's like, it's like tied up to a bunch of Nokia cell phones in the desert. It's like a cootie catcher in Iraq. He's like,
So the schematics that the crime boss is looking for specifically are, apparently there's some intel that this guy may have figured out how to straight up merge kami spirits with technology.
Whoa. And
fuse them into one thing.
Oh, okay.
So that's like powerful. Would be powerful, I guess.
Sorry, I just see Steve Jobs coming out onto the stage with his turtleneck, he's wearing his sneakers, he's eating a pear or something, and he comes out and...
Why would he be eating his pear? as an ironic joke?
Yeah. And he comes out and he's like, the new iPhone, we've combined technology with spirits. And then he pulls up his iPhone and he talks to his dead grandmother on the stage.
What if Tim Cook came out and talked to Steve Jobs like that?
Oh, that's right. That's better. That's better. And he's eating a spirit pear.
A spirit pear in the afterlife. Boy, I love this.
Well, actually, it's going to be called the iLife, I think, from now on or something like that.
Yeah.
Afterlife, yeah.
It's lowercase L, capital I, F-E.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
So Kaito's given just a name, Temeshi. He does his research. He figures out what the hit. Temeshi is holed up in the Bosaiju district, which meant Kaito was bound to run into some kami during the job. He's never been to the Bosaiju district. Pretty much closed off to the public. It's guarded by two kami known as Kodama. So I'm going to send you guys two pictures. Oh, I didn't send you guys here's a crime boss. It's not sending.
In Neo and Neo 2, the Kodama are these little green dudes who wear rice bowls on their heads. They look like babies.
Whoa.
So that's the crime boss. That's Satoru Umezawa.
Serious fucking fella.
Love the colors in that picture.
Yeah.
Very pink. Very, look at all that pink and purple.
Some green too.
Yeah, here's the Kodama of the West Tree, as they're known, and I will send you guys the Kodama of the East Tree, and I'll
let you guys
take a crack at describing those.
Jesus Christ.
They're Elden Ring-like.
Yeah, I guess for the bottom one, it does look like it's mangrove tree roots, and this gigantic amber core in the middle of it, and it's also super pointy. It kind of looks like a crest of some kind that you'd wear around your neck, and it's held up by all these twisty vine legs and has like an amber jellyfish flying around it as well.
Yeah. Three-legged amber sperm.
Yeah.
Floating around its head. Jamie, you want to try and describe the first one?
Yeah. So we're in a forest and there's this thing that's walking on, oh, my eyes are bad. On three legs on either side, six legs.
Jamie, you want to read the top line for me here?
Yeah.
Read the next line for me?
Oh, man. I don't know how I'm going to last a month. So on his back, there's this blue kind of base on the spine that kind of goes up to tendrils up to the shoulders that kind of reach down into the arms. And there's six arms that go down and he walks on them that have these big old tree handsy things. And I think there's a face in the middle, but my eyes are too bad to see.
No, there's no face. It's kind of just a blue orb with shapes. He's got four arms kind of folded in meditation. And he seems to be built out of a piece of a monolith or something like that. These are the Kodami spirits who guard either end of the forest.
The Kodami mommies.
Yeah, Kodami mommies guarding the forest. On the top one, Peter said there's those jellyfish or whatever that are circling around the east tree. The Kodama of West Tree has these like very friendly looking little like guys in farmer hats, like paddy rice hats, basically. Little like forest spirits.
These look much more like the Kokodama from Neo, from like Japanese folklore, which in Neo, they're like these tiny little like kind of baby looking things that wear different kinds of hats and they give you different kind of passives, basically.
Yeah, exactly. They look like the Kodama from Princess Mononoke as well, if anyone's seen that. Just like friendly tree spirits, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas the East Tree looks very, like, it looks menacing. I'd say the second one, it's like very red. It's very imposing. The first one, he's like in a peaceful pose with like his forearms kind of crossed in prayer. And there's these like friendly little spirits on top of him.
Pete, said, I'm sorry to derail once again, but Pete sent an eye test. You know, in every eye test, there's like, it's rows of letters and they get progressively smaller. And there's always that big E at the top. Mm-hmm. Who's the big E for? Is it just for... Well,
I'm Biggie, man.
You are Biggie.
Yeah.
Is it just like, can you read any of these? Nope. Oh, you're blind. Like, do they not know that someone with a cane who just came in can't?
What's even better about that is I'm pretty sure I read one time that it's like there's always an E at the top for a reason or something like that. So it's like you can just memorize the test at home, dude.
Well, who's doing that, though? Who are you helping, really, by cheating at an eye test?
When I go to the eye doctor, and I just saw this meme or this tweet today, when I go to the eye doctor and they tell me to read the letters, I say no. You can read them yourself, okay? Not helping you. I'm paying you to be here. I'm going to read your shit for you. Come on.
Yeah.
Give me glasses, doc.
Yeah. And whenever you're like showing me one picture and then another picture and saying, is this clearer or blurrier? Better show me cool stuff like hot women.
Yeah, bro. And hot dogs. Not too hot dogs, because I'll get hungry.
I want the strip eye test where it's just like, you've got like the better or worse, and like one lens takes her clothes off, one lens puts her eye
clothes better.
On. way better.
Do you see now? 7.
You just like trick dumb horny man into getting the glasses they need by doing like sexy eye tests.
Okay, so
Kamigawa's.
So he needs to get into Bosaiju District. It is guarded by these kami. He is going here to steal a dangerous technology which could imprison kami spirits in technology and basically enslave them to be used against their will, right? These things guard the entrances to this place. And he knows these are probably not the only kami that he's going to run into while he's out there. Luckily, Kaito has a sister training to be a kami diplomat, right?
Oh, right.
So he gets in touch with his sister, and they haven't really spoken in the last year since he left the palace.
Hanging out with some no good Knicks, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And she's been very prim and proper and living her best life up in the palace.
Yeah.
Aiko agrees to help him because she is concerned about, you know, this technology as well. About.
On one condition, you just put shoes on when you come over. He's like, fuck no, narc.
I mean, if anything, it would be you got to take your shoes off when you come over, right?
Because
in Japan, it's very disrespectful to leave your shoes on in the house.
So it's like, I was thinking just like the charcoal black bottom, like hippie feet.
So Aiko manages to convince...
But Pete is always thinking about dirty feet. It's just, it's one of these things that just keeps coming up.
Alexa, show feet. That's for any listeners at home who are not on headphones who have an Alexa, you're welcome. Aiko convinces the Kodama of the West Tree to enter, the friendly-looking one, to let them enter, which I love that one of them looks friendly and one of them looks very angry. And the canon story was like, they go to the West one. They go to the friendly-looking one, you know?
The one with the rounded edges is way more forgiving, if you can.
Than Mr. Pointy over there. Mr. Pointy wants to give you a hug! she omits tactfully the reason for their visit. They do find Tameshi's work eventually, after wandering the forest for a bit, before they find the Moonfolk himself. Kaito parts with his sister, basically saying, like, hey, I've got it from here. Thank you. And he spots a cage on the ground and is approaching it when the futurist ambushes the ambusher.
Oh.
Same guy?
It is not.
Oh.
It's a new moonfolk this guy Tameshi. He's not using a pseudonym. Name is Tameshi. So Aiko hadn't gone far. She was leaving a gift for the spirits, like the good Kami diplomat that she was when she saw the fight break out. She runs over. She breaks it up before Kaito manages to kill Tameshi, because he did have him in position two. But as the pride-wounded Moon Folk stood, he noticed something that Kaito had. The origami machine with Katsumasa had given him in a garden in Iganjo. So he notices his origami crane machine.
Right.
He basically says, like, oh, like, what is that? Where'd you get that? And Kaito's like, my friend Katsumasa gave it to me, okay? Don't even worry about it. And then Tameshi's like, dude, you're friends with Katsumasa? I'm friends with Katsumasa. We should be friends. they basically have a moment where they bond over Katsumasa.
And cool. Bunk beds.
But they talk a lot. They, you know, some accusations fly around, like, oh, you're trying to enslave Kami and, you know, do all these terrible things. Tameshi's like, I'm no villain. I'm just working to protect the Kami by offering them sweet robot bodies. If you could have a robot body, wouldn't you take it? If you didn't have a body in the world here, you could have a sweet robot body to protect your soft spirit inside. Wouldn't you want it?
Oh, yeah. Because, like, it is inconvenient. Every time they get killed, they get cast out, and they have to, like, regenerate in the spirit world, and then maybe they just get, like, launched through a border again or something, right?
I actually don't know how it works in... Now that, like, it's smaller, if they do recoalesce in the spirit world, if they coalesce in the material world, or if they don't coalesce at all, because there's, like, not enough room in the spirit world again, and, like, there's specifically these merge gates that they have to travel through. I'm not sure how it works, but...
Just show up on your relative's iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Eating a pair. Yeah. So... Either way, it seems they are, like, vulnerable to some extent, and Tameshi, this moon folk, has been working on a technology that would allow them to take on robot forms, or, like, metallic bodies.
Basically. Yeah, it's like a vessel, basically, it, for them to possess.
Yeah, he did have a robot body that he, nearby, that he was using to try and attract a specific Kami into that cage, the aforementioned cage, which was in the form of a tanuki. Do you guys know what a tanuki is?
Oh.
It's a raccoon with a big scrot.
Do they have big scrots?
That's...
I think it, like, canonically, tanukis have big old, like, big old scrots, yeah.
I'm going to send you guys a picture of one. It looks like it's got a bit of a pouch now that you mention it.
Yeah.
Because I know, again, in Neo, which is my only reference for any kind of Japanese folklore, I thought they were armadillos for a while, because in Neo, the scrot...
Because armadillos got big balls.
No, because their scrot in Neo on the tanukis is tucked backwards over the grundle, and then they wear their like ball sack on their head. So I thought it was a shell.
Okay.
Yeah, I always thought it was just like Japanese pervy meme that they had big balls. But...
Oh, this is a real tanuki. I thought you were talking about a folklore tanuki.
Yeah. So the tail that lets you fly in Super Mario Bros. 3. Is the tanuki suit, it's called.
That's no tail, brother.
Yeah, he's just swinging his big old new ball sack around.
It's like Tails the Fox, but it's like two balls.
I had always thought that they were mythical, which there is a lot of, like, folklore and legend based around them. Then someone told me they were real, and I thought they were red pandas. And then when I was researching today, I was grabbing a picture of one in case you guys didn't know, and I realized they're these, like, very adorable raccoon dogs, which...
Yeah, they're very cute, but here's a folklore one holding, like, a water bottle wearing a sun hat, and it's just sitting on its giant balls.
Yeah, he's got the Declaration of Independence, he's got a bag of seeds, and he's sitting on his, like, South Park Stan Marsh-esque...
I had that in my copy-paste. I was about to put it in. We found the same
image. JMP is posting the same meme. We'll post it in the memes channel after this with no context. So,
well,
if you guys saw a picture of a tanuki yesterday, there's your context. Finally,
here's the same one. I think he's like carrying a bottle of sake. He's got like an umbrella and is like dragging his balls.
Oh yeah, his balls are a cape. Why are their nutsacks so big?
Oh my god, the folklore thing. I don't know.
Check this one out, guys. This one's a fucking creepy one. It looks like people are fighting back against his balls.
Oh yeah, Mount Fuji's in the background of this one too, actually.
Yeah. Wow. Very nice. Yeah, so we'll say that the Tanuki for this story is the very big, bald one. Lore Boy's canon, the Tanuki machine that he's made is not this adorable little raccoon dog. The wholesome moment that I wanted to share with you guys, it's the big nut raccoon.
Okay,
trash panda.
To be fair, Jamie and I did not ruin this wholesome moment. Japanese folklore from probably the 8th century ruined this.
Yeah.
Long ago. Let's be real.
I found a statue.
This is the machine that we're dealing with.
Big balls, little dick, man. That's the way to be.
That's me. All balls, no dick. That's my... The first character I ever beat Dark Souls with was named All Balls, No Dick.
Very cool.
So Temeshi's no villain. He just wants to give Kami bigger balls. So he wants to build them robot bodies with which to house such girthy balls.
I've been posting all these balls pics in memes chat. I thought it was funny.
You said,
oh no!
you said, take a look at this one. I was like, I don't see anything. I guess it didn't send. I guess he forgot.
It's
like, oh no, he's posting them in memes for sure, which we said we do. So everybody gets the no context to Tanuki. He says, like, yeah, here's this Tanuki robot form. I'm searching for a robot Kami. It turns out Aiko was searching for a robot Kami. Whoa. And it's part of the reason that she agreed to help her brother. So on the night of the attack on Iganjo Castle, Aiko hadn't been cowering alone in her room, but instead had been looking for Kaito. What she saw, while all the guards were distracted with assassins and whatnot, was a blinding flash of light, which she knew instinctively as the birth of a Kami. And she saw it take the form of a Tanuki.
Okay.
She knew kind of inherently, and Temeshi confirms that this Kami, the Kami that he's looking for, is the embodiment of the relationship between the Emperor and Kyodai. So we've kind of talked about it before, how all the different Kami represent like a thing, where Michiko Kanda and Kyodai merged early on in their life to form one, basically, and be the bridge between the spirit world and the material world.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
That essence of their bridging is what this Kami is. And it was born in that moment in front of Aiko at Iganjo Castle.
Wow.
Such a Kami would have immense power over merge gates, the weakenings of fabric where power was generated, lost Kami spilled into the world, lets you kind of teleport into the spirit world. And so we were kind of talking about how, like, oh, you know, you could probably create some pretty dangerous technology by merging a Kami with technology. This is like the most dangerous Kami to merge with technology, basically. You're putting a nuclear reactor in whatever technology you want, basically.
You're putting a nuclear reactor in a raccoon's giant scrotum.
All the power of the fission of the sun in a raccoon's nutsack.
Doc Ock, just like the big scrotum in front of him, pulling in everyone's jewelry.
That's how they got so big, was the radiation.
The power of raccoon balls in the palm of my hand.
So Aiko and Temeshi had been searching for the same thing, but all Kaito could think of was this, the implication. Uh-oh. If this fell into the wrong hands, whoever had it would become the most powerful figure in the whole city, maybe the entire plane, pretty much right away. Like, if you get your hands on, like, this thing trapped in a box, that then you could do whatever you want with the box, you're instantly, like, person number one. The three were discussing it here in the forest, relatively alone, I have a quote for you guys to end us off here. I just didn't italicize all of it that I meant to. So here's a quote from the story, Kaito Origin Stories, The Test of Loyalty and the Path Forward by Akemi Don Bowman, of which, like, pretty much everything we've talked about has been from this story. Before anyone could say another word, a noise echoed outside the canyon, a sound Kaito knew all too well. A shout, a song, and a whisper, like three voices layered on top of one another. The voice of Kyodai. It can't be, Kaito mouthed. He moved slowly across the grass, eyes scanning the distance for a flash of the great Kami. Kyodai never left the temple. If she were here in Jukai Forest, did that mean the Emperor? Had the Emperor returned? Kaito didn't wait. The hope in his heart was too powerful, too desperate. Ignoring the warning shouts from Iko and Temeshi, he raced after the sand. He fought branches and brambles, kicking up clumps of dirt and running until his chest burned. There were so many things he wanted to say to her again, but mostly he just wanted to see her face and know that she was okay. Kaito skidded to a halt at the foot of an enormous camphor tree, the branches twisting in spirals and the leaves glittering an emerald green. But Kyodai wasn't there, and neither was the Emperor. Instead, he saw the tanuki-shaped kami with glowing white eyes and translucent fur, and the kami saw him. So that was Kaito origin stories, test of loyalty, a stranger in Iganjo, lies, promises, and neon flames, with a little sprinkling of the article Planeswalker's Guide to Kamigawa. In there, we will get to more tales of Kaito, his sister, and his newfound kami friend, Himoto, on my next episode.
Very cool.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. It's been my pleasure as always. If you like the show, consider leaving us a review, telling your friends, telling others, giving us a shout, sending us an email. We did a mailbag episode over the weekend on twitch.tv/theloreboys. It was a ton of fun. It was amazing to see everybody come out and interact with everybody and just have chats with everybody while having a couple beers and being generally goofy, I think it's fair to say.
A couple, in quotes.
I mean, on stream, so it was a couple. I don't even know if Jamie finished one beer of that whole stream.
I don't think he did, and then shotgunned one in my bathtub to not make a mess, which was nice.
He was trying to keep us on rails. How did it go, Jamie?
We had a tight like 3-hour stream and 2 hours of like recording, I think. And if you guys will get to hear that too out in the wild, and you can probably still catch the VOD for a little bit longer, but eventually that'll die on stream. But we'll bring it back to life in audio format and probably on YouTube, and then. Also, there's bonus content in there too. So there's other ways to get bonus content. So
yeah, you can cheat the bonus content if you can find the VOD. Yeah. What bonus content are you talking about? Why the Patreon bonus content?
Yeah.
If you want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/loreboys, where we have a couple of tiers where you can get a couple different perks. You can get the loser titles, the titles that didn't quite make it this episode, but are usually just inside jokes from the show. We do a fun guessing game where everyone tries to guess what the episode's going to be about based on what these sane out of context quotes usually are.
Discord, those are posted. Discord perks, you get access to like Discord chats that not the general public are in, that some cool combos go in. Sometimes like some live updates while I'm like playing games or like asking people to hop into games together. The Prime folks kind of have our own little community going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We said at the top of the show, but Comic-Con is coming up. You know, if you guys do want to get in touch with us in person, then Montreal Comic-Con 2022 is the place to do it. We're going on the Saturday, July 9th, like we said before. If you can make it, it'd be great to see you. Even if you can't make it to actual Comic-Con and you're around that night, by all means, we'll be organizing something on Discord, just given some locations. Where people can meet up with us and get
having hiccups in other places, clearly.
Yeah. Too much WADA, thank you. And of course, Pete's going to be debuting some panels from his comic or something. I don't know what he's going to be doing.
There is a different thing that is done and available. It is a short story that I finished, and that's prints are going to be available of that. There's going to be some prints available from my comic, and then Loreboys, we don't have any prints available because... Shockingly, you can't just sell jokes about other people's work, which is all the Loreboys art is, because we can't license the font, baby. But we will be there in business cards regardless. I mean, we're attached onto that, but also the other guys at Squared, there's a bunch of stuff that's going to be available that might tickle your fancy that might not necessarily be something that I personally have done. But it's all done by people I work with and admire very much, and they're all good. So
I'm going to be cosplaying myself, but I gained a bunch of weight, so that I didn't actually gain weight during COVID. It's just a cosplay.
He's cosplaying fat Jamie.
Yeah, that's what I'm
exactly.
Doing.
He thin Jamie is cosplaying fat Jamie.
Yeah, me in a fat suit, which is my skin and fat.
But yeah, July 9th, 2022, Montreal, Quebec, Canada, Palais de Congrès. It's Place des Arts Metro. On the Green Line, check us out. It's easy to find.
It is easy to find. Thanks for listening, everybody. I already plugged the Patreon, so I won't do it again. But if you don't trust Patreon, then we do have Loreboys Prime, the first and the greatest. Now, We've done a lot of crazy projects on Lore Boys Prime, so we're done with that. We're not doing any more crazy projects, just things grounded in reality. We want to see how big a raccoon's balls can get. Okay, so we're gonna need your guys' help with two things. A, securing raccoons for us to experiment on injecting various substances into their testicles to engorge them. And B, getting us clean needles, because the pharmacy has stopped giving us clean needles at this point. They don't think we're junkies. They found out what we're doing, and they said, no, you can't have these.
they'd prefer junkies had them, to be quite honest. Save them for the junkies.
Yeah. Clean
the
needles.
The heroin guys or the raccoon guys? Needles.
Yeah. So we've tried injecting a few things. Marmalade actually had some great results. Just straight tree sap was a little too sticky, a little too viscous for the syringes, so we broke a couple syringes to do that one.
I actually lined up 10 raccoons, and I used syringes to take out all the stuff from their balls just to put it into one other raccoon's ball.
Yeah, we did try raccoon semen, on one of them.
Yeah, well, I just tried raccoon ball fluid. I don't know if it's semen. Is semen stored? Blurred? Semen is stored in the balls.
Is piss stored in the balls? Is that we've come full circle to a meme from 2 years ago? That was today. Lore Boys.
Hey, Lore Boys.
Out.
Goodbye.
Out.
He was with us. So that guy thought they thought they were taking two young girls home, right?
Oh, right.
And then they
brought four guys.
Yeah, they brought four guys to the one girl.
I didn't realize we cucked that dude. Hard.
The night had...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.